I just want to let you know a few things that we're doing I'm excited about. I'm really, really dedicated to trying to figure out as many ways that we can try and meet the needs of our audience and the things you're interested in and the things you're excited about. I want to announce two things that we're doing and invite you to come to those. One of those is during Education Week. So if you live in the Salt Lake, Utah Valley area anyway, or if you're here for Education Week, Tuesday, August 20th, at 6 p.m., we're going to do a little meet and greet. It's going to be in room 213 of the Joseph Smith Building. And I'd just love for anyone who wants to come. First of all, I kind of want to get a feel for who you are and just meet you, but also ask you what kinds of topics you're interested in, what kinds of online and in-person events you might be interested in, what kinds of subjects you'd like us to talk about, just what you would like us to do to meet your needs. And then we can do some questions and answers for a while if you have any questions. So I would love to meet any of you that can come 6 p.m. Tuesday night, a meet and greet in room 213 of the Joseph Smith Building. Then the next week, we're going to do a live online event. It's through our Patreon website. You can get there by going to TSAR, that stands for the Scriptures Are Real, TSAR.website. And we're going to do a live lecture where I'm going to talk about the way that Isaiah teaches us how to avoid the wiles of the world and instead consecrate ourselves and be able to draw closer to God. This will be at 6 p.m. These are all Mountain Standard Time or Mountain Daylight Time. So that's August 28th, Wednesday, August 28th, 6 p.m. on our Patreon website. All right, you have to join us for this episode and listen to the end. I'm just going to tell you, if you're not listening all the way to the end, usually it's towards the end when we're like, hey, we got to get in and we hit hard, heavy principles. So you should always listen towards the end because that's where the best, most dense content is. But in this episode with Lamar, there's so much that we could have covered in the war chapters, but I feel just enlivened and passionate about what we did cover in terms of spiritual principles that help us and help us help others in a day when we desperately need it. And we talk about the principles we learned from Moroni. Right at the end, we're hitting, I think, some really key stuff about coming down from the mountain and fortifications. In my mind, this is one of the most important podcasts we've done this year because the principles in there, I think, are so applicable to what we're doing today. Hello, and welcome back to The Scriptures Are Real. I'm your host for today, Lamar, and this is my co-host and regular host, Carrie Muhlstein.
Hey, Lamar, it's good to be with you again.
Yeah, it's been a little while, but we say that every time, but you know, there's just lots of things going on and lots of guests to talk to and lots of things to keep up with, but excited to be together here.
Yeah, we both love this one, so we chose to do this one together.
Absolutely, yeah. At the beginning of the year when you were planning out some things, this is one that I kind of earmarked selfishly for me to be part of because these are some of my favorite chapters. For our listeners, we're going to be talking about Alma chapter 46, or I'm sorry, Alma chapter 43 through 52. So that's the section for the Come Follow Me reading for this week. And we're going to talk about this. And here's this. So don't tune out yet. If you guys are like, oh, it's the war chapters, don't tune out yet. There's some interesting things coming up, and we want to talk about this. So, Carrie, I get about half and half. Half of the people, when I'm teaching or when I've been in classes, about half of the people are bored by the war chapters. They're like, oh, the war chapters. It's like Isaiah all over again. And I know that bothers you about the Isaiah thing.
Yeah, it does about the war chapters, too. So, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so there's half, but the other half of the people are like, oh, I love the war chapters. So why do we have, it's not, I can't say like and dislike, but the people, yeah. Some people think it's a slog and some people think it's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's, I mean, it's sometimes in my classes, I find it's a little bit of a gender division, but it's not completely a gender division. There are exceptions on either side, but, and sometimes it's a narrative. I love narrative. Oh no, I don't like narrative. I like doctrinal stuff. But yeah, so those seem to be some of the reasons, right? Some people get lost in the story. Some people love the storyline because this is all storyline here with a few really powerful, you know, sermon-like things in there. Moroni has some things to say. Mormon has some things to say, but mostly storyline. And some people love that, some don't.
So it is a lot of narrative. And look, you're right that there is a lot of, it does kind of fall down gender lines. They say
that Star Wars appeals to more men than women. Now, a lot of women are still fans of, and they enjoy the
huge
movies,
groups, but yeah.
But you know, the kids that bought the toys and the t-shirt, it was more heavily skewed. And there's a reason why it's Star Wars and not Star peacetime talks and discussions of domestic tranquility. There's a reason why the war things hit with some of the kids. And my take on it is this: I'm a big history buff, and I do enjoy the history of World War II particularly, which is what Star Wars is based on. It's Star Wars is 100% based on the World War II people and the empire and things like that, is all based on those same type of archetypes that you see. The reason why I like to look at these things is because you see the worst in people in war. That's true. And I don't enjoy the killing and the blood and all that stuff, but I do enjoy seeing how, I'm interested to see how people overcome great odds. And that's what a good story is. And so you're right. This is about story, but there are excellent principles in there. And so I've gone through and I marked the principles. Now, see if you can name this quote. There was a person that was asked, how did he keep his city in such good order? They said, this legislator came to this person and said, man, how do you keep such great order in your city? We find it very hard. And this person said, I teach them correct principles and they govern themselves. Who said that?
Do you want me to really say, or?
No, you should say it.
Yeah, that's Joseph Smith. Oh, sorry.
That's right. That's right. So I was going to say, put it down in the comments, but you know, of course we'll set it before the comment get there. But yeah, Joseph Smith said that. He was asked by a legislator, we find it very hard to keep our people in line. They do. And the person who related this story is John Taylor. It's a millennial star where he writes this, and he writes a whole big section to the people of France. And he's telling them how well organized the church is, and also the people because of it, not because they force the people to be, you know, religious people, but because they are so well ordered in the church at that time, there's also a good governance. And that translates exactly to what we're going to see through these chapters here. And so that's what I want my key to be. And the theme for this is I teach them correct principles and they govern themselves. And we'll see how when the people follow correct principle in here, they have peace.
Yeah.
And when they don't have peace. And even when people come against them, they have peace if they're following the principle. So let's get into some of these things. Now, do you want to start with the people that are in these ones, or do you want to go through some of the narrative, or how do you want to knock that?
Every way is good. So whichever way you'd like.
All right. So here's what I have. So for the first part, there's a lot of details and personalities in here that I want to talk about, but we're going to talk about, first of all, we're going to introduce Moroni. Now in chapter 43, we first hear about him, but first of all, we hear about the Zoramites becoming Lamanites. So this is interesting. It's just kind of set this up because this is going to be our key. So in verse 4 of chapter 43, verse 4, it says, behold, it came to pass the Zoramites became Lamanites. Therefore, in the commandments of the 18th year, the people of the Nephites saw the Lamanites were coming upon them. Now, this is important because of this. When we start saying Lamanites and Nephites, there is a curse and there is a division and there is they look different to each other because they can recognize each other sometimes. But that's not as important as the way Mormon is setting this up. Mormon is setting this up to be the people who follow God for the most part are the Nephites, and the people who don't are the Zoramites or the Amalekites, and he kind of lumps them into the Nephites. So he's kind of defining the good guys and the bad guys in this conflict. And so he just kind of throws that in there. So we have a guy named Zerahemnah, who is the leader. And for whatever reason, the Zoramites and the Amalekites really do not like the Nephites. They even have more hatred than some of the Lamanites. They have a really big beef against them.
Yeah. And they're Nephite dissenters, right?
Nephite dissenters, exactly. Which, yeah, you find that the most bitter people are the ones that once were with those people, and then they've left, and now they have even more animus against their former allies, let's say.
Yeah. And I mean, I don't know. There are probably a thousand reasons why, but it seems like at least some of that, in my experience in modern times, at least some of that is that people feel like once they've decided not to believe this or decided to leave something, that they have to justify it to feel comfortable with it. And especially often, there's still some part of them somewhere that knows that this other way is good. There's a part of them, but they've decided not to do that. So they have to justify it. So you have to start to focus on it and all the time be coming up with reasons why it's wrong. You can't leave it alone because there's a little part of your conscience somewhere that's going to bug you. So you got to just constantly be coming up with good reasons why they're so terrible and you aren't part of them. And so there'll just naturally be more hatred because it's you're actively trying to, and you're not, it's usually not conscious, but you're actively trying to feel better about your decision.
I think that's true. And then some people have a little bit of resentment, like they feel like they've been tricked or duped or whatever, and they're going to kind of get back at that. Well, there's a lot of different reasons why people could do that. And I'm happy to have a conversation that's productive with that. But what I really want to say to those people is, show me what is better. What have you done that is better, or what have you found that is better? Show me a better way to live. I mean, you can talk about Joe in history. It says this, and there's this document that says, okay, good. What have you found that's better? I can show you that in the Bible. I can show you that in histories of all nations. There's people that do dumb, people are messy. They do dumb stuff.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's left, and Zarahemla takes advantage of that. And he's going to put them in places of positions of power. He's going to make them the captive because he's going to bring this together. So now in verse 16, in chapter 43, says, now there was a leader of the Nephites, or a man who had been appointed the chief captain over the Nephites. And now the chief captain took command of all the armies of the Nephites. His name was Moroni. So anyway, everybody likes Moroni. Now, I don't think it's a mistake that there are two Moronis in the Book of Mormon. There's this Moroni first, and then there's Mormon's son. And Mormon, of course, is compiling all this, and he names his son Moroni.
Yeah. That's
Is that a coincidence?
No.
I don't think so. I mean, Mormon is a leader in armies. He's involved in armies, learning about, he's captaining from about the time he's 16 and until he's 73 when he dies. So that's like, what's 58-ish years that he's involved in war. And even with being involved in war, you see that Mormon does not focus on war for war's sake. He focuses on the principles. But he names his son Moroni, and I don't think that's a mistake. Or coincidence, rather.
No.
I think that that's purposeful because he thinks so highly of this Moroni, this Captain Moroni that we find here. These are why these chapters, I think, are really stick out to me. So Moroni is how old? Verse 17 tells us he's 25 years old. 25 years old. Which, by the way, how old was Alma when Alma was converted? He's also 25. So 25, I don't know what the deal is, but 25. But people... 25. And if I think this all the time, long before I thought this, if I could be one particular year in my life, what would it be? What was the prime of my life? 25, I think, is about right. Yeah. I still have plenty of years to be in the NBA I've got plenty of years left to be a pro football basketball player. You know, I'm not too old. My knees aren't shot yet. So 25. So he's 25 and he takes over the armies. Now, Moroni is smart, and he prepares his people. And Zarahemla is a good opponent, or is a formidable opponent, but he is not prepared. Okay, so in this one, they come to battle, and they have some great battles. So, what are we learning here? What's our principles that we're going to stick to here, Carrie? What's the doctrine that we're learning from this first war chapter?
You want me to talk about it? I mean, there are a number of things. Maybe I'll even preface it by saying this. There are about a third of the Book of Mormon deals with war in one way or another, but you have some large, huge wars that are just passed over. and in like a verse or less.
Right. They mentioned kind of almost in passing.
Yeah. And then you have this war, well, this little one, and then the succeeding one that's a very long one, that are given tons of details. So again, I'm going to assume Mormon is doing that for a reason, and it's because there are principles he wants to highlight in here. And I think some of it is the people that he thinks we can learn from, like Moroni, like you were saying. So one of the things that I think we see in this chapter that we'll also see in some of the succeeding chapters is that Moroni is not passively preparing. He is aware that there are dangerous forces out there, and he is always working on getting his people prepared for that, so that this time they've got armor and so on that's never been seen before. We'll see a couple chapters later, now they're building up their cities in ways that have never been seen before. So Moroni is huge on getting fortifications and defenses, and just he's proactive in always thinking, what is going to happen to my people and how can I prepare them for that? Which I actually think is a wonderful parallel with President Nelson.
That's exactly right. I think that's where I'm going too. And I ask you questions because a lot of times you're interviewing guests, but I want you to, you know, let's have a dialogue back and forth, so it's not just me yammering on.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate that. I like the dialogue.
Kick around these. So that's exactly right. And you hit all those nails. I mean, we're so on the same page on all these ones. In this first part, he prepares the people. He's preparing armor and all the things that go with it. You know, they have armor and they have weapons and they have thick clothing and the breastplates and shields and helmets, or, you know, something that goes on their head. So a head plate, they say. So he prepares the people. Now, later on, the Lamanites are going to catch on to this and they're going to try it themselves. But by that time, Moroni has prepared the cities, like you said, and defenses and embankments and all kinds of things. But notice it's all in defense. He's not putting, Moroni is not preparing siege engines and things to go lay siege on something else. It's all defensive.
Yeah.
It's defensive, and he's doing this. Now, here's the cool the part. Now, I'm, along with being a history buff, I really like spy stories. I just think I'm intrigued by spy stories, and Moroni is clever, and that's what it is. It's the mental game that's happening that intrigues me a little bit with this. So look here in verse 43. In verse 22, it says, behold, it came to pass that when they durst not come against the Nephites in the borders of Jershon, therefore they departed out of the land of Antionum. So they see that they're too strong in this area, so the Lamanites are going to go around the other way.
Yeah, now, which chapter are you in again? Around,
I'm there, 43. This is chapter 43, verse 22.
Okay, thanks.
And they don't want to attack Nephites in Jershon. Therefore, they departed out of the land of Antionum, and they went into the wilderness and took their journey around the wilderness away to the head of Sidon, that they might come to the land of Manti and take possession of land. So they're going to kind of come around the rear. For they supposed that the armies of Moroni would not know whither they had gone. But Moroni had sent out spies. Okay, so in verse 23, Moroni sent spies in the wilderness to watch the camp. So Moroni not only is preparing his people, but he's also paying attention to what's going on. He's got some spies out there. But what's better than a spy, or at least as good? It's better. That's a clue. What's better than a spy? A drone. Okay, well, not a drone. They don't have drones then. But they do in verse 24. They have something even better than a spy and better than a drone. They have a prophet. Verse 24, when it came to pass, the word of the Lord came into Alma. The Alma informed the messengers of Moroni. So he sent spies out. He's doing what he can to understand the battlefield or the enemy or whatever. But he doesn't rely on that alone. He asks the prophet, what do I need to do? He sends messengers. And the Alma says to the messengers of Moroni that the armies of Lamanites are marching around the wilderness and that they've come over in the land of Manti. Now jump down to verse 25. Moroni, leaving part of his army in Jershon, he leaves some of there. Now, this is funny. It leaves part of the army in Jershon, lest by any means part of the Lamanites should come back and take possession of the city. So Moroni now divides up his army. So in my World War II battlefield, I see these, you know, this map, and I see the arrows going this way, and I see the arrows going this way, and then they're just swinging around the back, and they're going to, you know, go long and I'll fake it to you. And then we're going to, so this is where all the kind of fun things happen. But my point on this one here is that he is not just preparing physically, he's preparing spiritually. He asks the prophet, what shall we do? Yeah. He sends messengers to them and the messengers report back and tell them what they should do. And now he starts making preparations. So he leaves some people here and he divides his armies up. And so in verse 26, he caused the people in that quarter of the land should gather themselves together to battle against the Lamanites to defend their lands and their country and the rights and their liberty. Now, I would like, if you're listening now and you haven't gone through this before, if you have, mark how many times the Book of Mormon notes that this is a defensive, always a defensive. They came to battle to defend their lands, their country, their rights, and their liberties. Mormon will repeat that over and over and over. I mean, I think it's at least four times in this chapter alone that it's to defend their country and their rights and their liberties. And then sometimes just rights and families, but it's country or family, country, rights and liberties, and oftentimes says religion in there. It's defensive. He's not trying to get power. He's not trying to get one up on the Lamanites. He's not trying to take land. He's trying to defend the liberty. Verse 27, it came to pass, Moroni caused his army should be secreted in the valley near the bank of the river. So, okay, you guys hide there. And, you know, they got the camouflage and then they got the striped paints and these are the Navy SEALs version. They're going to go out there. And now Moroni knew the intentions of verse 29. Moroni knew the intentions of the Lamanites, their intention to destroy their brethren and subject them to bring them into bondage that they might establish a kingdom over them. Now, verse 30. And he also knowing that it was the desire of the Nephites and their liberty and their church, therefore he thought it no sin to by stratagem. Therefore he found his spies, which of course the Lamanites would take. So that's, we now hear the word stratagem, which reminds me of President Bush years ago, you know, strategery. Anyway, it was kind of a mistake, but anyway, by stratagem. So he thinks it's no sin. So why does he mention that he thinks it no sin to defend by stratagem?
No. Well, it's easy for us to start to see spies and deceit and these kinds of things as a bad thing. But I think it's important that we start to think through. It's not about spies, trickers, so on. It's about thinking through everything you can that will defend you. Just carefully planning, carefully thinking it through, leaving no stone unturned, no mind course unexplored, we try to figure out how can we protect our youth, how can we protect our families, how can we protect the church.
Right, right. He's going to take advantage of surprise and a surprise attack, basically. But he doesn't think there's any sin in this because he's not trying to take advantage of them to gain it. He's trying to, it's all in defense.
That's right.
In defense of these things. And so he doesn't think in any sin. I have that extra highlighted that he thought it was sin to defend themselves by strategy. So I think we are interested in that because we are not here to take advantage of somebody. We're not trying to outwit somebody to get one up on them, but we do the best that we can to defend ourselves and our families against whatever attack out there. So there's the principle.
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, maybe we could, if it's all right, maybe we can just kind of tie this into a little bit larger principle. And maybe this is somewhere where you were planning on going. And if so, I apologize if I'm getting there.
No. This is a dialogue. We're going the same place. I know we are.
But to me, one of the greatest things, there are several principles or things that I think we'll address that we should learn from these war chapters. But perhaps one of the greatest ones is a lesson on spiritual warfare. I personally believed that we are involved in a pitched battle spiritually, that there are plenty of people who are as bloodthirsty for our testimonies, the testimonies of our children, the testimonies of our young adults. They want to kill those testimonies every bit as much as they were. Zarahemla wanted to kill Nephites and bring them under his power. And the question really is, how are we going to fight this spiritual warfare? How are we going to how are we going to protect ourselves and our families? And the more I study, whether it be things about the last days or whatever else, the more I think this does come down to, are you protecting your family? Are you protecting members of your ward spiritually? And how are you doing so? So maybe I can, if it's all right, even read a couple of things along those lines.
Yes, please.
I'm going to start with President Benson in a couple of different ways. But President Benson says, and remember, President Benson is the one who really got us understanding how important the Book of Mormon was. So we're going to turn to him a bit as we are reading things from the Book of Mormon. If the Book of Mormon prophets saw our day and chose those things which would be of greatest worth to us, is not that how we should study the Book of Mormon? We should constantly ask ourselves, why did the Lord inspire Mormon, Moroni, or Alma to include that in his record? What lesson can I learn from that to help me live in this day and age? So there's more to this quote, but I want to stop and highlight. It's easy for people to say, okay, war chapters, I want to be done with the war chapters. They are here for a reason. Don't skip them. They are here because we need them today. So he goes on to say, there's example after example of how that question will be answered. For example, in the Book of Mormon, we find a pattern for preparing for the second coming. A major portion of the book centers on the few decades just prior to Christ coming to America. By careful study of that time period, we can determine why some were destroyed in the terrible judgments that preceded his coming. This is part of that. The war chapters are part of that. They're part of us part of the Nephites preparing for the second coming. This is what's happening just a few decades before the second coming. And right, we find ourselves in a similar position. So we should pay attention to that. And then I'll throw this in. John A. Witzow taught, there's a spiritual meaning of all human acts and earthly events. It is the business of man to find the spiritual meaning of earthly things. So that's what we need to do with these war chapters. And I know I've got lots of quotes here, but I just want to do a couple more if it's all right. President Benson at a fireside at BYU. Yeah. He said, for nearly 6,000 years, God has held you in reserve to make your appearance in the final days before the second coming of the Lord. You are the generation that must be prepared to meet your God. Billions of the deceased and those yet to be born have their eyes on us. Never before on the face of the earth have the forces of evil and the forces of good been so well organized. Now is the great day of the devil's power. Each day, the forces of evil and the forces of good enlist new recruits. Each day, we personally make many decisions showing which cause we support. Great battles can make great heroes and heroines. We will never have a better opportunity to be valiant in a more crucial cause than in the battle we face today and in the immediate future. Some of the greatest battles we will face will be fought within the silent chambers of our own souls. I love that line. David's battles, yes, in the field against the foe were not as critical as David's battles against in the palace against the lustful eye. Each of us has his or her own battlefield. The tactics which the enemy will use against us will vary from time to time. He will seek to exploit our weak spots, so we must be alert to the devil's devious designs, right? He's going to use stratagem, so we need to use stratagem. The subtle, right, sins and clever compromises, as well as the obvious offenses. So I just feel, I have to tell you that more and more, I feel like my job has become to prepare. It's to fight some spiritual battles, of course, in my own life and for others, but it's also to prepare others. It's to train people spiritually how to fight the battles that are real and that are happening all around us. And the forces of evil are more organized than ever before. They're more prevalent. They're crafty. They literally, honestly, have made plans. How can we convince people to accept this pernicious doctrine or that pernicious doctrine? And they have carefully made these plans. So we need to be carefully making our plans of how we defend, how we control access to our cities, or how we put armor on our children. You know, there's that famous quote from President Packer about, the breastplate of righteousness and the shield of faith are best crafted, fitted, and put on in the home, right? We put them on our children, right, our grandchildren, our nephews and nieces and cousins and so on. So as we go through these things you're talking about and this stratagem and Moroni turning to the prophets, so there's one more thing I want to say about that, but let's make sure we're seeing the spiritual parallels. And then I love how Moroni, I mean, in some ways, Moroni can symbolize the prophet himself, right? He is constantly trying to teach his people what they need to do to be prepared for these onslaughts. And I think President Nelson has really been doing that. But I think Moroni also can symbolize a parent, a young women's president, a Relief Society president, a bishop, whoever, in that, okay, I'm preparing my people in this way. Where am I going to get my direction from? Well, this is the story where he is being aligned with the prophet. And I'm here to enthusiastically plead and testify that if we stay aligned with what the prophet is teaching us, if we're telling people when he says we need to let God prevail, then we emphasize that. When he's saying be peacemakers, we emphasize that. When he says these are your primary identities, we emphasize that. When he says you'll find all your answers in Christ, we emphasize that. If we are aligned with the prophet, he's getting from God, like Alma was, here's where the people, the enemies are going to attack. And so we, like Moroni, should, okay, let's rush our defenses over there and be use stratagem to do it. These things that the prophet is teaching us, how do you hear him? This is the prophet telling us, here's where the enemy's going to attack. Here's how you fortify yourself. And if we're not paying attention, we're not going to survive spiritually.
Exactly. That's on track with what I wanted to put out of this. As much as I would like to talk about how clever it was that he went over this hill and he went over this, I mean, I'm intrigued by the storyline. But the important part here for this one, for the scriptures are real, this podcast, is how do we make this real to us? And that's exactly all the things you said, all those quotes is exactly. That's why I led with that one, that the quote from Joseph Smith. We teach them correct principles and they govern. We can't take direction, or we can't be told what to do in every facet of life by the bishop or the stake president or the whatever, but we can take the direction that the church has, like Alma did, and say, hey, here's the thing. Like, you know, if you look back, just take a step back and see what happened in this last 20, 30 years, the proclamation of the family, that came out quite a while ago. And now we see attacks on the family and our definitions and how we define things. We look at the COVID, the disruption that COVID did, but what happened before that? We had the Come Follow Me program, which brought it much closer to home. Like, hey, now we're gonna practice these things in the home, we're gonna teach these things in the home, and then the church reinforces it. But you should be studying it at home first and reviewing at church rather than the other way around. And I guess it should have always been that way, but the emphasis changed. And then right after that happens, COVID happens. I mean, the church has given us clues, you know, get a food supply, get 3 months, get a year. These things are going to happen. And, you know, get prepared for these things. The church has been saying these things a long time, and you're seeing it more and more all the time. Why this has happened, how the disruptions happened in the supply chain during COVID and all these kind of things. These are manifestations of what the church has been telling, or the prophets have been saying for a long time, be prepared. And that's what I'm getting here. Like I said, again, it's nice to talk about, you know, the Lamanites went over to the hill of Ripla and the army was concealed in the south. But that's not the focus of that I want to get to today. I want to get to the correct principles that we want to incorporate in our lives. And all those quotes that you just said are spot on with what I want to talk about.
Yeah, wonderful. Yeah, okay. And it's powerful and it's important, and we need to not be asleep at the wheel.
Right. And now we're not going to have time to go through all this. I kind of led into this, and you can go through. I mean, John, by the way, also, he has a couple of series on this. That's where I got the age of Alma. But he has some ones where he goes through piece by piece and what happens here with La Honta and all that.
Yeah.
He's very entertaining, and I like those ones. And please go through and read those ones and read this book. I mean, look, this is every bit as engaging as Lord of the Rings. I mean, the stuff that happens in here, I know it's written in old English and sometimes it's hard to understand, but it's really intriguing on how these things happen. The storyline is important too, but the principles is what we want to focus on today. So let's just kind of summarize the rest of 43. Moroni has planned for the best, and he kind of traps them in and the Lamanites come in and they're attacked from the front and they're attacked from the back and they're attacked from the sides and they get hemmed in and are taken care of. But here's what I want to point out to wrap this one up. In verse 43, first of all, now in this case, the Lamanites did fight exceedingly. Yea, never had the Lamanites been known to fight so exceedingly, so with such exceedingly great strength and courage, known not even from the beginning. And then verse 44 says they fought like dragons, but 45 is the key. Nevertheless, the Nephites were inspired by a better cause, for they were not fighting for monarchy nor power, but they were fighting for their homes and their liberties and their wives and their children and their all, yea, their rights of worship in the church. So that's why they're inspired. They're not trying to take over. And I think this is, again, I think this is what you see in World War II as well. And I think that's why, I mean, there's lots of reasons. You can say, well, there's supply lines and they're fighting on two fronts and all these things. But I think that the people then were not fighting for domination. They were fighting for defense.
Yeah.
And that's what the key of this is. So at the top of 43, I went through these chapters and I put, there's many principles that are being displayed in these ones, but I have a kind of a top principle for each one of these chapters. And this one is fight for freedom and liberty. That's the principle here.
Good. I might throw in one other if it's all right.
Yeah.
And I'll again, just read a very simple statement. This is from President Benson, his talk, Book of Mormon, Keystone of Our Religion. But he said this, from the Book of Mormon, we learn how disciples of Christ live in times of war. One of the things I'm impressed with Captain Moroni, he's not a bloodthirsty guy. And you'd think someone who was so involved in warfare for so long would become so jaded that he would stop caring, but he doesn't. And this is one of those where he's pleading with the Lamanites, please, we'd like not to kill you. We are not going to bend or yield on defending our freedom. That's non-negotiable, but we would really like to not kill you. And he gives them again and again opportunities to stop the bloodshed. He won't back down, but he would really like to not have so much bloodshed. And I think that's something if we're going to talk about what to learn in times of war, how disciples of Christ live in times of war, that's a great example. And we're going to see Moroni exemplify that, not just very, very well in this chapter, but in lots of other chapters, but maybe best we see it here.
Exactly right. In fact, I read 45, but in 46, there's also a key there as well that I have underlined. They said they were defending the worship in their church, and they were doing this in verse 46, and they were doing that which they felt was the duty which they owed to their God. Yeah. For the Lord had said unto them, and also unto their fathers, here's the key, insomuch as ye are not guilty of the first offense, neither the second, ye shall not suffer yourself to be slain by the hands of your enemies. That's what you were just saying here. They were forgiving people. They weren't guilty in the first offense, and they in the second time too. And of course, there's the, you know, the Bible talks about forgive them 70 times seven, and then there's other, you know, there's other rules when you engage and when you don't engage. But the key is here is that you're not guilty of these things. You're not causing the offense, and you're going to let it go. You're going to let it slide. You're going to, and not the second offense, but you're not a pacifist when it comes to your liberties. You are not supposed to be subjected by somebody else. You have the liberty to worship God how you should or how you wish. So that's the principle that I take away from this. And then, of course, Moroni captures them, and then we'll wrap up this part here with Zarahemla. With this part here, with what you just said. So they come to the battle, and finally Moroni sees that they have them trapped, and there's a great terror comes upon the Lamanites, and Moroni stops the battle. And I gotta give it, this is kind of funny. You get a little hint of what Moroni's like, and it seems like he can trash talk, but with... But with like really long sentences. So in verse four,
chapter verse 44?
44, yeah. He says, now you see that the truth, that he stopped the battle and he's talking to Zarahemla.
Yeah.
Oh, in fact, I should back up verse one. And it came to pass, they did stop and withdrew a pace from them. So they Moroni stops the battle and they back up a little bit. So they're not, you know, hitting each other.
Now, strategically, this is a really bad idea, by the way. You're killing them. You're literally, this is when you have momentum, when things are wildly on your side. This is when you usually just keep going. But he stops because he would like not to kill so many people.
And he says that. He says, behold, Zarahemla, we do not desire to be men of blood. I don't want to do this. So he's given him a reprieve here. And in verse 2, neither do we desire to bring the yoke of bondage. We don't want you to be slaves. We're not trying to take you over. And even if we win, we don't want you to be our slaves. But for this very cause, which you've come against us, and we are and you're angry with us because of our religion. So then in verse 3, he says, you see that you cannot destroy our faith. And in verse 4, so long as we are faithful unto him, God, that is, and unto our faith and our religion, never will the Lord suffer that we should be destroyed, except we should fall into transgression. So if we are faithful to the Lord, he will not allow us to fall into oppression. And then he says, this is what I find kind of funny. And now, Zarahemla, I command you in the name of the all-powerful God. And he goes on and he makes this big speech. And this is a funny trash talk. He says, strengthened by armies and have gained power over you by our faith, by our religion, by our rights. He goes on with a big thing and he's not done. In verse 6, he says, and this is not all. I command you by the desires that you have for our life. He goes on for two and a half verses telling that what he's commanded to. And you get down to verse 7. He says, now behold, ye are in our hands, and I command you that all my men shall fall upon you. And this is the funny one. Inflict the wounds of death in your bodies that you may become extinct. He could have just said, we'll kill you. But he doesn't say it. He says, well, inflict the wounds of death, you should become extinct. And as a comedian, I find language very funny. And I just think that's, it's not a humorous thing, but it's just the way that's written. And brother, that's a license that Mormon took when he translated this or whatever. I just find that kind of this dialogue, you know, with these two people, we shall inflict the wounds of death on your bodies, you'll become extinct.
So this is not how like Marines would talk today.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So anyway.
So maybe I can point out just one interesting thing, just because like in some of the verses we read, it talked about their rights, R-I-G-H-T-S, of liberty. But interestingly, if you're just hearing it out loud, you might think it's the same thing in verse 5. But actually, he says, verse 5, we've gained power over you by our faith, by our religion, and by our rights, R-I-T-E-S. So that's rituals, by our rights or rituals of worship, and by our church and our sacred support, which we are our wives and our children. By that liberty which binds us to our lands. I mean, if you're talking about motives, what incredible, incredible motives that list we just read. But it includes the ability to have ordinances, basically, is what he's talking about. Our rituals, our ordinances, being able to go to the temple, all these kinds of things. He recognizes that that's their true strength. And so if we're going to talk about spiritual warfare, look at that list again. So I'm going to say again, this is how he's saying they've gained power. He doesn't say by our stratagem. Right. Although that certainly played into it, but really the stratagem was the result of the prophet, and the prophet being able to tell them and listening to the prophets is the result of all these things. Gain power over you by our faith, religion, rites of worship, church, sacred support, which we owe our wives and children, and the liberty which binds us to our lands and country. When you are making a list, and I hope everyone here will, both as they're listening to the podcast, and then they'll go through these chapters and very carefully make lists of what they need to be doing to be successful in this spiritual warfare, what they need to be doing to help their children, their grandchildren, their nephews, nieces, their scouts, their CTR eights, and whatever else. You should be making a list. What do I need to do to help me and to help them be successful in this spiritual warfare? This is a verse that you should pay pretty serious attention to. That's a good list of things that we need to make sure we are preparing people with if they're not going to have their testimonies slaughtered.
100% agree. You're right. And again, all these chapters are about the defense of liberty, and religion is in there. It's the top of the list, is to be able to worship God according to the dictates of our own conscience, if we're going to use, you know, the articles of faith. Okay, I'm going to skip all the narrative because I want to just key on what you just said. Make a list of these things. Now, as we record this, we're in July. We just passed 4th of July, which in the United States is the day that we celebrate the freedoms and the liberties here of being independent, of being an independent nation. And then among those things are, you know, life, liberty, and property, and the pursuit of happiness.
Yeah.
That's what we are celebrating here. So this to me is true patriotism and true religion. But the list you mentioned is what I want to key on. And I'm going to skip all this because we're going to run out of time before we run out of things to talk about. There's so many great things here.
Yeah.
But this is one of my favorite scriptures in all of the works, because this one, the title of liberty, I think applies to me. And I'm going to skip all the way to chapter 48.
Okay.
Because we're going to talk about the list that you just mentioned. And this one here is my favorite scripture, because this is verse 11. This for me is the standard. This is what I would aspire to be. And I think this is why Mormon puts this in there. And it says in verse 11, and Moroni was a strong and a mighty man, and he's a man of perfect understanding. Yea, a man that did not delight in bloodshed, a man whose soul did delight, or his soul did joy in the liberty and freedom of his country and his brethren from bondage and slavery. Now I'm going to pause here for a second. Kerry, tell me what you think about this. What do you think it means he's a man of perfect understanding? Does that mean he's perfect? Is he perfect in all things?
No. In fact, I hearken back to, you get a similar description in Alma 17 when Alma meets the sons of Mosiah. And it talks about how they're of perfect understanding because they've studied the scriptures and they've prayed and they fasted. That's what helps you be someone of perfect. And I don't think that means you understand everything perfectly or that you know everything God knows, but you understand what you need to understand because you're getting it from God, because you paid that price. You did those things we know we need to do to understand from God.
I think it's exactly right.
Worldly understanding. So we said you think celestial.
Okay, great. Yeah, that's a good quote, to put on it from a modern prophet. I think that the same thing applies in Genesis, where it says that Noah was perfect in his generations.
Right.
It doesn't mean he was perfect. In the Hebrew word there, if I'm not mistaken, Hebrew guy, it means complete.
Yeah.
And so we're going to apply this to Moroni, that he has understanding. That doesn't mean he's perfect. Doesn't mean he does everything perfectly. It doesn't mean that we have to be perfect. But,
and we'll see that sometimes Moroni is mistaken in what he's thinking.
Sure.
And yet he's still acting on inspiration. It still brings about good things. But so you don't misunderstand perfect understanding in that way.
No. And when he does make a mistake, he corrects it. I mean, we can go to section 121 of the Doctrine and Covenants, which is, it has a perfect verses 35 through 46 talk perfectly about leadership. And I think Moroni fits in all those categories. We won't go there now, but check out Doctrine and Covenants section 121, 34 through 46. And there's no better complete description of how leadership, especially with the priesthood, should run than that. Okay, so a man is perfect understanding, yea, did not delight in the bloodshed, a man whose soul did joy in the liberty and freedom of his country from his brethren of bondage and slavery. Yea, a man whose heart did swell with thanksgiving. So make a list. I hope you're making a list. I have a list over here to the side. Swell with thanksgiving to his God for the many privileges and blessings which he bestowed upon his people, a man who did labor exceedingly for the welfare and safety of his people. Yea, a man who was firm in the faith of Christ, and he had sworn an oath to defend his people and his rights and his country and his religion, even to the loss of blood. So
the loss of his blood.
Loss of his blood. Yeah. Loss of his blood. So he didn't pledge other people's blood. Everybody else was volunteer for this, but that's your list. So what's the list? He has perfect understanding. So he's sought some knowledge. He's thought about things. He's researched. He knows the scriptures. He does not delight in bloodshed. So he is a peaceful person. His soul delights in liberty. So he appreciates his liberty, and he does not, liberty and freedom of his country and his, not just him, but his brethren from bondage and slavery. So he doesn't want to be bound himself. He doesn't want his brethren to be bound. He wants liberty and freedom.
So, if I can just interrupt, and then I want you to go back to this exact list. But one of the things I like to teach my students is to learn principles of leadership. You've got the best and the worst of leaders in these chapters, like you're talking about, but that so much of it comes down to motives. So if you start looking at Moroni's motives as opposed to Amalickiah's motives or Zerahemnah's motives, right?
Right.
And we want to look at that. So look at Moroni's motives in this list right here. It is not about him at any point, right? He joys in the liberty and freedom of his country and his brethren, right?
Right.
And so ask yourself, as you're doing all these things we're telling you you ought to do, like help other, you know, help people be firm in their faith and so on and so on. Check your motives. Are you doing this? And I'm saying this like to myself as well, because my personal opinion is that as we do good things, we always have to stop and examine our motives, because if you're not intentionally trying to get rid of it, you will always end up with the natural man inserting in there that you're doing this somehow to make people notice that you're great or something along those lines. That will always happen if you're not actively looking for it and trying to get rid of it. So as you're doing all these things, making all the lists, all the stuff we're talking about, ask yourself, what's your motive? Is it so that people will think you're cool like Moroni? And there's going to be a little part of it that is until you squash that. Or is it because you joy in the spiritual and physical liberty and freedom of everyone around you, and you don't want them to come into spiritual bondage and slavery? That's the motive Moroni has. And we get that again, he labors for the welfare of his people and all the lists you're going to keep going through, but look for those motives. So sorry, keep going.
No. I think you're exactly right. And I think about this, even with this podcast. Look, I come from a comedic background. Our audience may know that I'm a comedian, and my job is to entertain. And when I'm a teacher, I like to be entertaining, but I have to constantly balance that. I want people to like to come to class, and I like people to have fun and understand the scriptures, but I don't want that to get in the way. And I think about this, and I pray for that all the time. I'm like, hey, help me not to get, you know, my comedic, my desire to entertain to overcome the spiritual part, you know. And it's not about being famous and be the best teacher and all the people come to your class. It's not about that. I like to be an entertaining teacher. That's great. I hope that translates, and I hope that people like to, I hope it does, you know, makes the scriptures come alive. I get that. But it's not about being more popular or being the best podcast, and which clearly we're being heard by several dozen people as we speak. So, I mean, you know, we are going to overtake Mr. Beast and his ratings. Anyway, okay. So so you're right, though. So what is the motive is fine. And the next verse, verse 13, is going to emphasize that. Now listen, he says, his heart did swell with thanksgiving to God for his blessings. So now he's got the gratitude taken care of too. He wants the safety of people, but he's thankful to his faith in Christ and his gratitude toward God. Then the next thing is he labors for the welfare and the safety of his people. He's like Ammon. He goes to serve them. He's not looking to be the king. He doesn't want to be served. He serves the people. Labors for the welfare and the safety of his people. And then he's firm in the faith of Christ. And then he's sworn the oath to defend the people and the country religion. So what happens if you get a bunch of people like this? What happens if the church, the people in the church adopt this, these same ideas, the same list of principles? What happens? Well,
Mormon tells us, huh?
Yeah. In verse 17, this is one of my very favorites. I don't like to get emotional when I teach, but it happens to me all the time and my kids make fun of me for it. So I hate that.
Yeah.
So verse 17, and verily, verily, I say unto you, if all men were, if all men had been and were and ever would be likened to Moroni, behold, the very powers of hell would have been shaken forever. Yea, the devil would never have power over the hearts of the children of men.
Yeah.
There you go. Well, it says right there, he's like a man of Ammon, and also says up right there.
Yeah.
But now that I can't think of a higher praise that I could have in the scriptures than someone to say that about another person in the scriptures. Mormon says, hey, if everybody would be like this, the devil wouldn't even have power over you. And I talk about this all the time when I'm teaching things like spirit prison and things like that. When we're talking about those kind of things, I would say, what kind of power does Satan have over you to bind you? It's only by your letting him in.
Yeah.
It's only by you coming down. And we're going to miss that with Lahontai coming down. And that's a fun thing.
Oh, and we're going to, we have to talk about that for at least a second.
Okay. But the power that the Satan has over to you is only when you let him in. So if you are doing this list, trying your best to do this list, not that you're perfect at all these things, not that you're perfect all the time and just even this list, but if you're trying to do those things, the devil cannot have power over you. And if everybody was doing that, how was Satan bound in the millennium? When it says that he was bound, I don't think he's bound because he's tied up and put somewhere else. It's because the people shut him out.
Yeah, it's by the righteousness of the people.
That's right. He's bound because we are bound to something else. We're bound to God, and he is not able to attack or influence us because we don't let him. So there's the principle for there. And that's why this section of the Book of Mormon in this Come Follow Me, and especially this chapter, is one of my favorites in all the scriptures.
Yeah, amen to that. And if you'll notice, we see it in this reading. You see it in a number of places in the Book of Mormon, but probably in this reading more than anywhere else. The Nephites, the Lamanites come against them. So the Nephites and Lamanites, let's just say, are symbolic in this case of the kingdom of God and the world, all right? The world trying to overcome people who are the saints of God. That's the way it's phrased in say, 1 Nephi 14, which is really about this same thing. The Nephites are able to keep them out of their cities, keep them out of their land. It's not without prizes, not without bloodshed. It's not without people dying. It's not without a lot of pain, but they keep them out of their land. When they get in, it's because there were Nephites that descended. It's because they let an element of their society let them in, basically.
That's right.
And if we're going to read that or apply that spiritually in our homes, in our families, in our own lives, what we have to be most afraid of is letting the world in. And we have set up 1,000 devices and pay a whole lot of money to allow the world to get in at high speed.
Yeah.
Right.
Right. Yeah.
It's absolutely true. I have become just so fully convinced that one of the most important things we need to do, and it needs to start with you asking yourself individually, so you, Lamar, me, Carrie, and each member of our audience, what are you letting in that you shouldn't? Look at the right stuff you let into your brain, into your mind, into your heart, into your head, whatever. What are you letting in that you shouldn't? Because that's where we'll start to falter. What are you letting into your kids' lives that you shouldn't? What can you do to teach your children about their children to protect them? And that's a tough battle. Controlling the media that comes into our lives is maybe the toughest battle of all with youth and teenagers right now.
Oh, agreed, yeah.
And yet it's the most important battle of all. We can't forget that. So maybe if it's all right, I know we need to wrap up, but there are two elements of that I want to talk about. One, the story of Amalickiah gaining power among the Lamanites is fascinating. There are some important lessons in there, and we're not going to go into it in detail, so we'll just ask our audience to spend time going into it. But I want to focus on one part, and just for the sake of time, I'm not going to go read it from the scriptures. I'll tell a story and plead with you, go read this and think it through and ponder and ask God for inspiration on all the stuff we're talking about, but including right this part. You remember that Amalickiah has his servants kill the king. The king's come out to meet him. He has his servants kill the king. And then when the king's servants run away, he turns to all the people and he says, those of you who love the king, go pursue them.
Right.
And so he becomes king, first of all, by treachery, but second, by using people who actually loved the king and wanted to do what was right and just twisting it against them.
Yeah,
it's so nefarious. And I'm here to tell you that that's going to happen. I think it is. And it's going to happen again and again and again with the thought leaders that we choose, with the political leaders that we choose, the social leaders that we choose. If we are not choosing people who are absolutely 100% full of integrity, they will use our righteous desires against us. That's one of the lessons we can learn from here. And that's a little frustrating because right now I look at the political landscape and I mean, I don't want this to be a political podcast, but I will say that I'm not sure that we're finding anyone in, there are maybe on smaller level politics, but you get to national politics, I'm not sure I'm seeing anyone that has 100% integrity. I may be wrong. Maybe I'm just missing some people, but that scares me. And I look at like Hollywood or, you know, Radio City, where we get a lot of our media coming into us, TikTok or whatever. I'm not sure there's anyone there. Where are the Jimmy Stewarts?
Yeah. Yeah,
right? Where are the people that you're like, okay, I trust that guy. That guy has integrity. I think there are a couple, right? There are some people who have good intents, but mostly not. And so we're going to have to look for, that's why like I've gone to where I like to watch Christian movies. I watch, you know, BYU TV, these kinds of things, because I trust those guys, right? I trust the guy. I know the guy who's, and we had him on, Dan Debenham, who runs Relative Race, right? That's a guy with integrity who has good intents. So he's not going to use it against me. But a lot of the shows that I like, I can tell, oh, dang it, the person who's making this is using my trust against me right now. And so I think we have to be really, really aware. That's part of defending ourselves and not letting the enemy inside our homes and our bedrooms and our heads.
I 100% agree. You're right. And I'm in the entertainment industry and I've been in lots of big movies and things like that. And one of the things that holds me back is I'm like, I've read some of these scripts and I'm like, I can't be a part of that. I don't want to be a part of that.
Yeah.
I have some crazy stories about some of those things. But you know what you mentioned,
Malachi. You want to share one? I don't know. Go ahead and share one.
Well, I can give you one. It was a George Clooney movie, actually. It was Three Kings is this movie it's been a while now, but I was up for for one of the roles and I went down to read. I went down to Tucson cause it was shot here in Arizona, went down to Tucson to read for the part. And I was reading one and it had some F words in there. And I'm like, I'm not going to say these things. And I'm like, I'm trying to figure out how to get around. And I've got lots of other people that have had different ways of like, well, you know, you got to read what's in the script. And, you know, even LDS actors, you got to read what's in the script. You got to do this. And I was like, it is. And so I went to go read that. And when it came to that F word, I just said, it's not a freaking whatever like that. I put freaking in there.
Yeah.
And later on the way back home, the other actor I was riding with who was really serious, he's like, dude, you can't do that. You can't just go around and do that. And I said, I know, but here's the thing. My daughter at the time was like 2 or 3. I'm like, my daughter don't understand this now, but later on when she sees that movie, if I'm in that movie and I say that word, she's going to ask me why I can say that word and she can't say that word. Okay. And that's more important to me.
That's powerful.
I didn't get the part, I did not get the, but here's the funny thing about that. That part got cut from the movie. That was was one of the beginning scenes, and they only showed the very smallest part of it with no dialogue. So whoever said that line, they didn't get
cut out in the end.
So I got cut out, but they got cut out. But anyway, I mean, I've had lots of different things like that, and other things like I read these scripts, and I'm like, I can't do that one, you know. And these like a shout out to JK Studios and the Studio C guys. They put out some really funny stuff, and I've been with all those guys. We've been on stage, and they like the Relative Race, Josh,
or Dry Bar Comedy is one that I like. I hear Christian guys doing comedy, and I feel a lot safer. Yeah.
Angel Studios is backing good things. So there's good things to back out there. But I wanted to bring out something else that we mentioned here, that you mentioned Amalekia and killing the king. But before he kills the king, before he has the power to do that, it's the story of Lahontai.
Yeah, we got to talk about that.
We got to get this in before we quit, because this is like the very definition of laying down your guard. So if you don't know the story, really quickly, Amalekia is a big, strong, mighty guy, and he gets a group and he sends a secret emissary up to a defended hill spot position, and the number one leader of the armies up there, his name is Lahontai, of the Lamanite armies, he says, hey, come down, I got something to talk to you. And Lahontai says, no, I'm not coming down. That happens four times, about three times first, right? He sends him, come on, we just want to chat. And he's like,
I am not coming down off the top of this mountain.
Nah, I'm up here, hit later on, you guys. So he comes down there. So this time, and think of the principle. What's the principle behind this? Lahontai goes, Amalickiah goes up the mountain just outside of his camp. So he's like, I'll meet you halfway.
Yeah.
Or even more than halfway. Goes up there. He's like, just come out here a little bit. Just a little bit. And that's the fourth time. And then Amalickiah finally says,
or Lahontai. Right.
Lahontai. Lahontai comes out. I'll come out there. Look, I just wanted to, you're
I'll
great
come woman. Down because it's just a little bit, basically, is what he says, right?
And he makes it, there's a whole bunch of intrigue, how he's coming around surrounding, and he sets up a whole big trap, and Lahontai looks like a hero for a little bit, and they kind of absorb the armies together. Now, here's the interesting part. They together, and he's like, okay, Lahontai is the number one guy, and Amalickiah, I'm going to make you number two. Now, the deal is the number two becomes the number one if the number one dies. And what does Amalickiah do? He poisons Lahontai by degrees.
Yep.
It's not right away. He doesn't stab him like he does the king. He poisons him by degrees. He has somebody poison him in his drink or whatever. He's poisoning him by degrees. So let's think about that principle.
Yeah.
It's exactly what you mentioned earlier. What are we letting our guard down? Like, you know, hey, watch this movie. No, I'm not going to do that. Try this. It's not going to hurt you one time. You know, just try this one time. It's not. It's fun. No, I'm not going to do that. Hey, you know what? Let's go to this place here. Just a bunch of friends. No big deal. No, I'm not going to do that. Well, hey, what if you don't have to come all the way. Just a little bit. Why don't you just check this out on YouTube and or whatever?
Yeah. I'll just look at TikTok and just see this thing.
I'll just watch it. Oh, that's pretty good. I'm going to watch that. Well, I'll watch it a little more. I'll watch it. And then by degrees, we are poisoned.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's a reason that these things are in here and the principles in here that we can do it. So what can we take from these principles and govern ourselves, govern our families, protect our families, our country, and our religion? So
I want to share maybe one story about that exact thing. So I was teaching a course at LB. More specific here than I usually am, but I think it's important. I was teaching a course, is the second half of the Book of Mormon, and I was teaching it in the Varsity Theater at BYU. So it's a great, great big classroom, but it was COVID, so everyone had to be spread out. So it's maybe about a third as many people, a little more than a third as many people as I could hold, but it's still a big class. There are a lot of people in there. And we get to this one, and I say, okay, what are the lessons we can learn from just coming down the hill just a little bit? How does coming down the hill just a little bit make it so you're not poisoned by degrees or make it so you get poisoned by degrees? And students were coming up with ideas. And one of them is, okay, when you disagree with the prophet on something. So I chose, and I knew this might not go over well, but I thought it was important. I chose a pretty hot topic of that day, and it still is. And I said, okay, so yeah, what if you agree with the prophet on everything he's teaching, but not on the teachings about marriage being between a man and a woman, which is a very hot button issue, right? Absolutely. I said, what if you just disagree with him on that? Have you come down the hill just a little bit? Does that have the potential to be poisoned by degrees? And I said, I think it does. Well, I have never gotten so many students staying after a class for that day or several days thereafter to come up and tell me how wrong I was. If you disagree with the prophet on that issue, that's not wrong to disagree with him on that issue. You shouldn't say that's coming down the hill just a little bit. But I'm here to tell you, disagreeing with the prophet on any issue is coming down the hill just a little bit. I don't care if it's that issue or another one. If you say, okay, I agree with him on everything, but this one I don't, so I'm just going to do or believe differently on this one, that's coming down the hill. It is swallowing a little bit of poison. And if you swallowed a little bit of poison and you've come down the hill a little bit, you're going to get more poison on something else. And you will. I really believe this. If you've chosen, now I'll say this. I support the prophet in everything. It doesn't mean I'm able to follow what the prophet asked me to do equally well on everything that he asked me to do, right? I'm working on that. That's life. Yeah. I'm working on it. I'm better at this than at that, and so on and so on. But once you've said, okay, I disagree on that. He's just wrong on that. I'm going to believe differently on that. That's a different thing. And then you've come down the hill a little bit, and you have been poisoned a little bit. And I believe that eventually you'll disagree on more and more and more and more things, and you'll get poisoned by degrees, and you'll find yourself with outside of the fortifications with your testimony being attacked. I really believe that. And there are a whole bunch of other ways. So I would plead, again, enthusiastically plead with our audience, ask yourself, Every single one of us is doing this in some way, myself included. What is the way that right now you're coming down the mountain a little bit? How have you come outside of your fortifications on this issue or that issue, on one issue? Find one thing. Please pray about it. Ask the Lord for direction and ask him, what way have I come down from the mountain just a little bit? And then get back up that mountain and get behind those big walls. Please do that. And then teach your children or your grandchildren to do it. It is so important.
I 100% agree. And I see this happening all around me. I've seen it happen to church members, family members. I see this happening all the time. And I don't want to open it. We could open up a whole nother discussion. We'll go into another podcast and everything. I don't want to do that. But I do want to mention this. Some people will say, hey, you're strong-headed and you won't listen to me. In another forum, I have a thing called Common Ground, where I talk about some political principles and things like that. And I'm happy to talk about things, people where people disagree with me. Now, I'm not looking to argue and I'm not looking to do this, but I will listen to what they're saying because I want to get down to the one word, the P word that I've made this thing. I've made the P word principles my lifespan. It's my title of liberty. This is what I go by. So when I'm thinking about things, if you can't listen to me, then you don't understand me. I do want to understand people and what they're talking about.
Yes.
But what I want to boil it down to is the principles.
Yeah.
So I will talk, I want policy, I want principle over policy. So if you want to, you're talking about the gay marriage thing or whatever you want to do, let's talk about the principle that's behind that. If you want to talk to me about that, then I want you to explain to me, what is the principle behind this? What is your principle you're operating on? So my idea on Common Ground is this: let's come to a common ground. And before we start talking about this talking point or that talking point or this policy or that policy, I want to know the principles that are underlying this. What are we trying to get to together as a person? If we're not going to try to work together and come to common ground, then we're just going to shout at each other. And I'm not interested in that. But if we're going to work from a common ground perspective, let's bring it back down to the principle. So you explain to me the principle you're trying to reach by this, and then we'll work from there out to what the policy should be, or what the rules should be for this, or how we should approach things. And that's how I think you maintain being in that. It doesn't mean that you are excluding people. You're not excluding people from your tower. There's a difference between the Tower of Babel, where you're excluding people, and a position of strength on a high place.
Right.
And the difference is principle. That if you don't let your principles down, you keep your principles high. That's how you stay in the high place. Keep the principle, and then knock out anything else that doesn't agree with good principle. If it doesn't agree with good principle, then it's not worth pursuing. Yeah. And that's how you test those things. That's my thought on that.
Very good. Very good. So I think maybe we just sum up by saying there are so many principles that we've discussed here. And in the end, they all kind of come back to being able to survive spiritually in the last days. And President Nelson has told us a couple of things. One, if you're not having regular revelation, you're not going to survive spiritually. Right. Two, Christ is the answer in all of these things. He is your strength. He is your power. But we have to identify what are the things we're doing that take us away from Christ, or that make it so we can't receive this spiritual revelation, and a whole bunch of other things. It's my prayer that we'll all go through these chapters prayerfully and ask the Lord in this pitched battle that we're in. And I do think we're in a pitched battle. I'm not an alarmist. I'm not telling you that the second coming is the week after tomorrow, but I do think we're in a time where the spiritual battle is more pitched than I've ever seen it in my lifetime. And I think it's just going to get worse. And so please, more than you ever have before, you may have done this 20 years ago or when you were in seminary or whatever else, more than ever before, please go through these chapters looking at these principles and saying, what do I need to do to survive spiritually in these days? And how can I help those around me survive spiritually based on what I learned from these chapters? And then go share that with some people. Share it online. I'd love, love, love if you got online. And again, we've been encouraged to ask you to have discussions online. This is one where there are a lot of lessons we can learn. So get online. If you're not listening to a platform, like a lot of our audience, a whole huge segment of our audience is on Apple podcast, but there's not really a place to share there. So go get on the YouTube channel. Even if you listen on Apple, get on the YouTube channel and leave a comment, or wherever it is that you can leave a comment. But that's probably the easiest place. But wherever it is, leave a comment. Here's what I learned from it, or here's something that I thought I could take away from it. And let's help each other. So share in person, share online, share in your class, share in your family home evening, share when you go visit your grandchildren or your nephew and niece. Share what you're learning, please. And let's fight this battle together with Christ.
Amen. I agree. And comment on this podcast. Carrie and I actually read the comments. And if people have good comments or they ask a question, we'll answer you as best we can anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, let's wrap it up there, Carrie. I really appreciated that. And I don't have anything further to add. I would love to just for people to take your advice and to look at these chapters and to share with people and to serve others. And that's how we're going to found ourselves with Christ and keep these correct principles.
Yeah. Amen. Amen. And I forgot, I do need to ask you next week, tune in next week. So we've got more, we'll be able to share more principles next week. Brad Wilcox is going to be the guest next week. I think he'll be fantastic as we go through, you know, the Stripling Warriors. Brad Wilcox will be fantastic. So tune in next week, but don't just let this week go by. Draw some power from this week, the way Lamar was just saying. So thank you, Lamar.
Well, thank you, Carrie. Great to see you. And thanks to all of our listeners out there and viewers, like, comment, subscribe, all those kind of things that help us to spread the message. And we'll see you next time.